we've been going through the book of Luke in here on Sunday mornings, and we're going to look at some verses out of Luke chapter 12 in a message I've entitled, The Art of Converting Worry. Okay, I love that title. Let's get right after it. There are so many things that we can convert in this life. You can convert your ordinary car into a hot rod. You can convert a spare room into an Airbnb now. You can, if you're lucky, convert a beaver fan into a duck fan, which shouldn't be too hard after the last 2 weekends. That kind of thing, okay? We can also convert our worry into other things. Check out these verses that Jesus speaks to us out of Luke chapter 12. Then Jesus said to his disciples, his friends, therefore I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat or about your body, what you will wear, for life is more than food and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, and yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable are you than birds? That's good to know. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wild flowers grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you, not even Solomon, King Solomon, in all his splendor, was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? So in these verses, Jesus says to his friends and disciples, don't worry about your life. That sounds so simple, doesn't it? It reminds me of the Bobby McFerrin song, Don't Worry, Be Happy. But the problem is, in my experience, getting rid of worry is just not that simple, especially for people like me who are very gifted and talented in your ability to worry. I can worry quite easily. Now, before I move on, I want to define the difference between worry and anxiety. I know I've spoken about anxiety in the recent past, but there's a difference between worry and anxiety. Worry is a temporary state of apprehension you have about some situation in your life. Anxiety is an extreme feeling of fear that isn't temporary. Sometimes it can last quite a while. For any of you that deal with anxiety, you know what I'm talking about. There are many things that people choose to worry about, but two of the biggies are situations you can't control, and then probably the biggest one, the future. That is a big cause of worry for people. Now, it's easy to beat yourself up for being a worrier, especially when some well-meaning Jesus follower comes up to you, they heard that you're worrying about something, and they spout some Christian-easy phrase to you. For example, they say to you, you know, I know you're worrying here, but worry ends where faith begins. And I thought, well, that's not helpful at all. That's not helpful at all, because now I'm worrying that I don't have enough faith. So thanks a lot for that little Christian easy message to me. So the question is, I thought to myself, what can we do when we find ourselves worrying? Because we all do. Here are some lessons from a worry wart, the worry wart being me, okay? And here are some things I found very helpful to do that help convert my worry into something so much more positive. The first is be in the now. Worry is all about what might happen in the future, and it makes you travel into the land of what if. And once you arrive in the land of what if, asking all these what if questions, your monkey mind quickly engages and comes up with all kinds of worst case scenarios that might play out if your worries happen to come true. It's exhausting and it's not helpful at all. I told some of you about this surf instructor in Orange County, and he was giving a wealthy businessman a surf lesson, and the guy was a total worrywart. I could totally relate to this guy. And he kept asking the instructor, this really chill, laid-back surf instructor, well, what if? He had all these what-if scenarios. Well, what if I fall off? What if I lose the board? What if a shark comes in here? What if? And finally, the surf instructor was exasperated, and we edited this to make it PG instead of R-rated, but here's the advice he gave this businessman. Stop worrying about stuff. That's funny that she edited it to that. He used a different word. Stop worrying about stuff that is not happening. That's actually really great advice, because ultimately worry about is what it is. Sorry, I got a little tongue-tied there. Ultimately, worry is about what is not happening. Not what is happening, it's about what is not happening. It's much better to be in the here. It's much better to be in the now instead of being in the land of what if. Because the presence of God isn't experienced in the land of what if. God is a God of reality. The presence of God is always experienced in the here, in the now. There's this great story in the book of Exodus in the Old Testament portion of our Bible. I'm sure you've read through Exodus multiple times, right? It's actually a super cool book. I'll preach on it someday. But there's this one particular story starring God and Moses of Charlton Heston fame, okay? And God at one point says to Moses the most interesting thing. He says this. I'll put it on the screen. Come up to the mountain and be here. So basically God is saying to Moses, come here and be here. And that sounds odd and redundant and repetitive, but it's actually super cool because what God is saying is, hey, be present in the moment when you get to the mountaintop. Don't just climb the mountain. Be on the mountain. Be with God. Stop. Breathe. Be in the now instead of worrying about what's next in your life. It's a great moment that Moses has with God. This is an important lesson for all of us to learn. One of the best things I found that I can do when I'm worrying, and it's also the hardest thing, is to push pause. It's just to stop. Stop thinking about what is and think about what is. God is with us right here, right now. That's what actually matters. The ancient mystic poet Rumi's going to be in the house today. He says this, I love this. He says, do not worry. If all the candles in the world flicker and die, we have the spark that starts the fire. I love that. I love that. When we are in the now, when we're aware of who is with us, our worry gets inverted to this calm, enduring trust. It's a great conversion. The second thing to do when you find yourself worrying is go outside. In the verses we just read, Jesus is telling people, hey, are you starting to worry? Go outside and look at the birds and look at the flowers. It seems like odd advice, but it's really helpful. First of all, let's talk about flowers. Here's some images I just came across online. Oh my gosh, these like took my breath away, okay? I'm looking at these and I'm going, a simple thing like flowers is so amazing. You'll discover something. Try this on your own. Go on a walk, and there's different flowers blooming in different people's gardens. Just come to my neighborhood out in Royal Creek, and they have amazing gardens, some of the houses out there. And look at the flowers. Don't just walk by them. Actually look at them. People think you're so weird, but go ahead. Come into my yard. Look at these orchids that are blooming right now. And you'll look at them, and you'll discover something. When you're busy being awestruck by the beauty of something, you don't have time to worry. Your worry actually gets converted into joy when you look at a flower. And now let's talk about birds. Jesus mentioned ravens. I don't want to talk about ravens too much. They're not my thing, okay? Because they're a little too Alfred Hitchcocky, Edgar Allan Poe for me, okay? Just a little too dark. I'll tell you what's my thing. I like birds. Hummingbirds. Hummingbirds are totally my thing. If I was secure enough in my manhood, my next tattoo would be a hummingbird, but I can't quite get there yet, okay, because I know my son would make fun of me, all right? But hummingbirds are amazing, especially the kind we have here in Oregon. Their wings beat 50 times per second. Per second. Just wrap your brain around that. Their hearts beat 1,260 times a minute. And their hearts are teeny tiny little things. And the little ones that are here that you see around your yards and trees, we have them in our yards. We have a feeder. And they'll come into our yards. They migrate every winter to South America. They're like this big. They're not super high up on the food chain, in case you haven't noticed. And they make the journey to South America. They're amazing. No wonder a group of them is called a charm. That's what they're called because people thought in olden days that they looked like flying emeralds, okay? So they're called a charm. Well, what does looking at birds and flowers have to do with worry? Well, first of all, birds and flowers are part of nature. I want to give you a quote by the author and naturalist and actually a deeply spiritual man. You'll hear quotes from him in the near future. I'm reading a little book that's partly about him. His name is John Muir, and he says this about nature. Climb the mountains because nature's peace will flow into you as sunshine into trees. When we get out in nature and really take it in, really notice it, peace will displace our worry. It's so amazing. It flows into us. The third thing we can do if you're starting to worry is simple. Move. When we exercise, and I know I have some people that work in the medical field here, when we exercise, our muscles secrete chemicals into our bloodstreams called myokines. These awesome little chemicals are often referred to as hope molecules. I kid you not, because of the positive effects they have on us. They end up acting as little worry busters when they get released into our system. So movement is a very important element to stop worrying. I don't know why, but you worry more when you're sitting still. I mean, think about it in your life. You worry more when you're still. The fourth thing we can do is pray. I want you to check out some verses that the Apostle Paul wrote in a letter to a church in Philippi. And it's actually about anxiety, but as I read through these verses recently, I realized, oh, they totally apply to worry too. Let's look at what he says. Don't be anxious. Well, let's say worry. Don't worry about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. That is great advice, because when we pray, we bring these two things, our worries and God, and we place them side by side. And those worries that you consider to be so huge, so insurmountable, so catastrophic, suddenly aren't, because when you place them next to God, they seem to shrink. I'll give you an example of how this works using sharks. Stay with me for a little bit. I am terrified of sharks, especially great white sharks. Terrified. I can't even watch the Sharknado movies. I am so afraid of sharks. I really am. But I love to snorkel in the ocean. So those two things bump up against each other. Like whenever we've gone to Hawaii with my wife and I or other places, California or Guam, I love to, it's a whole new world under there. I could stay in there almost all day just being with the fish. But if at any time when I'm snorkeling, I suddenly think, hey, I wonder if there's some sharks around here. It's game over for me. I'm done. I'm literally done. I can't just calm myself in the water because that's their territory. I don't belong there. I'm done snorkeling for a while. I have to come and like reset my brain before I can go back in there. Okay? But I wanted you to see an image that I came across this week. These are two shark teeth. This is a great white. The little one is. The other one's a megalodon. Now, they're extinct now, which probably is good for us, okay? But they used to be, they were around millions of years ago, and they are huge. They absolutely dwarf, as you can tell by the tooth. You dwarf the largest of great white sharks. So let's put this all together. If I had a megalodon as my snorkeling buddy, okay, stay with me here, I wouldn't be afraid of any great white sharks and I could snorkel in peace. When we pray, we attach ourselves to God and we realize we have nothing to worry about because our God is with us, our God is for us, and God is so much bigger than any of our worries. Our worries are going to end up as nothing more than a footnote in the narrative of our lives. It's going to be okay. Some of you need to hear this. It's going to be okay. We are going to be okay. Life might hurt like hell sometimes. It will, okay? Trust me. But we're going to be okay. I've been reading a lot this summer. I keep telling you that, but I really have. I'm plowing through books this summer, and I finished one by a brilliant Catholic theologian named Ronald Rollheiser, and in the middle of the book, he has this quote, and it just leapt off the page at me. I'll put it on the screen. He says, "In the end, everything will be all right because the dance of creation is being danced by an all-good and loving dancer." Oh, my gosh, I love that. Let's be people who pray so we can grab a hold of the truth in his words and have our worry converted into peace. And lastly, the last thing we can do if you find yourself worrying, you can be generous, you can give. That also sounds like strange advice, but it's super helpful Because when we give, not just of our money, but of our time, our energy, our resource, our gifts, our worry once again is converted into joy. That's why Jesus actually ends this section. We didn't read it today, but he tells his friends, God has given you the kingdom. In other words, God has given you every good thing. So now it's your turn. Sell what you have and start giving to those in need. Now, earlier in the chapter, Jesus tells a story about a dude in his barns, and he starts it by saying, be on guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. And that's very true. And then he tells him this story about the dude and his barns. And this dude had a farm, and he had a bumper crop one year, and it produced so much produce, his barn couldn't hold it. And instead of sharing his blessings and his bounty with the people in need all around him, he decides on his own to just build bigger barns and store it all for himself. And he's so pleased with himself, he thinks, this is great. My life's going to be all eat, drink, and be merry, or in my way of thinking, all margaritas, beaches, and burritos, okay? It's just going to be total blessings because I've got such this bumper crop stored all for myself. But then the dude dies in the story, and in the story, God looks at him, the dead guy now, and says, what a fool. And then the story ends with God saying this, this is how it will be with anyone who stores things up for themselves but is not rich towards God. It's kind of a shocking story. A couple of things about it. First of all, it doesn't sound very nice of God. It doesn't sound very God-like for him to look at some guy and go, what a fool. It just doesn't, it seems like bad manners. So this week I looked up the word fool in the original language of Greek thinking, well, maybe it meant something different back then. Okay, maybe it was a little softer, not so harsh. The Greek word for fool is aphron, A-P-H-R-O-N, and it means stupid, ignorant, and egotistical. And so I read that and I got, well, that doesn't make any better. Okay, but let's be honest. We've all come across people, possibly this week in your life, where they start talking to you. And maybe one of them talks to you about the incredibly bad decision they just made in their life. Or maybe they talk to you about something they read on the internet that's just ludicrous, and yet they believe it because everything on the internet's true, right? And as they're talking to you, you're thinking to yourself, what a fool, okay? You are, right? And we even say it of ourselves. You've probably done something this week or in the weeks, you know, before that where you thought to yourself, what a fool. It's happened in my life. I've told some of you the story. When I was a single dad just living with my son on our own, I really wanted to make Christmas special, so I hung up these Christmas lights outside, and it was quite a while ago. It was like in the year 2001 or 2002, and it was raining outside because it's December in Eugene, and I had the old kind of lights where if one bulb goes out, the whole strand goes off. I hated those things. They don't exist anymore, thankfully, but I'm so proud of the decorations. My son was going to love it. He loves the lights, and then one bulb, something happened to it. And the whole thing went out. I go, no! And I had to fix it. It was just really important to me as a single dad. And so I go out there in the rain on my metal ladder, okay? On my metal ladder. And I do, I find the bulb. Something had cracked it. Maybe a squirrel got up there or something and it's cracked. I go, oh, great. And I had a replacement bulb. And I start to pull it out and I can't get it out. It's the smaller ones. I can't get it out. So I think to myself in my infinite wisdom, I'll use my teeth, okay? So I can remember this like it was yesterday. I go, oh, I'll just get it. I didn't unplug anything because I'm wise, okay? And I bit it, and it's starting to come out. I go, yeah! I was so excited. I bit it, and it's starting to come out. And then my tongue, the more I pulled it, somehow touched the filament. And the next thing I remember, it's kind of a blur from there, but I remember a huge jolt, and then I'm laying on the ground in the grass looking up at the rain falling on my face. That's like the first thing I remember after that. I thought to myself, and I still think to this day, what a fool. Unplug the lights first. I mean, it was easy to see which one was broken. Okay, unplug the lights. But this story is actually about the dude, is about more than the foolishness of hoarding our physical stuff like money and possessions. I believe it's also about the foolishness of hoarding internal stuff. Now let me explain. Many of you will have thoughts occasionally like this: I'm so scared I won't have enough. Or, and this is an even more difficult thought, I'm so scared that I'm not enough. Okay? That sort of thing. And when those worries come into our lives, we hoard different things to try and ease those worry. We hoard things like our affections, our talent, our time, our energy, or even our compassion. But Jesus invites us to imagine a new economy that doesn't include greed or hoarding at all of any kind. Jesus has a better idea, and he calls it being rich towards God. But what does that mean? You see, the Bible tells us that everyone and everything in the world belongs to God. So being rich towards God, does that mean we have to give him a loan or something? No, God's not needy. Everything belongs to God. I believe being rich toward God means realizing how much God has given us, which includes our very life, and anything good that it's made its way into our life is all a gift from God. And so then we decide we're so grateful for everything that God's given us, we want to copy God's behavior and give to others. That's what it means to be rich towards God, in my mind. Back to the story. The dude with the barns, he thought he'd won at life because he had all this stuff. But his greed, which is the opposite of how God works, actually caused him to lose. In the story, he died alone. So it means he never got to experience the joy of giving to someone in need. And this is a biggie, he never got to experience the joy of someone else giving to him. Generosity is who God is. Generosity is a defining characteristic of the divine. After all, God didn't create the universe by being stingy. God created the universe with this wild, irresponsible generosity. It's why we have 11,000 species of birds, okay? God is recklessly generous. So to be rich towards God is to appreciate God's generosity, and it's to be generous towards others, and here's the big one, and it's to be grateful when other people give to us in our times of need. That's how God operates. It's this smorgasbord of generosity. That's the economy of God. Now, I'll end by saying this. Most of us are good when I said being generous to others. You go, yeah, I should do that. I can do that. I can give to others in need. But we struggle of letting other people be generous towards us, don't we? In fact, we even hide our needs. We pretend like we don't have any needs. We don't want people to think we're needy. We're embarrassed by that, so others don't give to us because of our own egos. And we shouldn't do that. It's a good thing when people give to us. One of my favorite authors, she was writing on her Substack recently about her own dad. And her dad was this professor, and he was a big, tall, strong guy, and he had this like commanding presence and really dignified. But as he got older, he developed this neuromuscular disorder, and his body started to wither away. And at first he needed a cane to get around, and then he needed a walker, and finally he needed a wheelchair. And then one day his health took a severe turn for the worse, and he ended up in the hospital. And she's visiting him there, and she's watching this bevy of nurses have to do everything and take care of him, even taking him to the bathroom. And she looks at her once proud, like commanding, strong father and goes, "Dad, I'm so sorry. It must be so humbling to have people have to do so many things for you now, including going to the bathroom." And it shocked her. He looks at her and goes, "No. No, kiddo, you got it all wrong. Them helping me, that's the good part." And she was so shocked by his response, but it is. Letting others give to us is a good thing because it keeps the cycle of generosity rolling in life. It's so great.